Hello and welcome to the Feminist Frequency podcast all about Star Trek Picard. I'm the half-Romulan head of security, Anita Sarkeesian, and as always, I'm joined by Fenris Ranger, who always shows up when you need her, Ebony Adams.
Just press that cool keychain I give you, and I appear guns blazing.
We're going to be taking a break from the nonstop Zoom calls that we are apparently all on these days to chat about episodes 8 and 9 of Star Trek Picard. And to round out our conclave of three, it's clinical psychologist, host of The Psych Show, and friend of the podcast, Dr. Ali Mattu.
Oh, so good to be back here. I feel like it was just yesterday, and also not, that we were last talking about Star Trek Discovery.
Wait, I tell you what.
It hasn't been 560,000 days since we've last spoken.
Oh my gosh.
The Listen, world is... we could not have picked a better guest for this show, I tell you what.
Oh. Yeah.
we really got a good one for this.
Can we just have a session? Can we just just do a session with me and Ebony, please?
That's like all I've been doing this week.
Oh, I bet.
Just like not, and I don't mean just with my patients, but like just with like everyone and organizations and like friends and oh my gosh, it's a different world. Things have changed.
For folks who might listen to this 10 years into the future, coronavirus is a thing that is happening currently, and everyone is kind of on lockdown right now. Well, everyone should be on lockdown, but a lot of us have been isolated for five, six, seven. I don't know what we are at officially, but we're pushing on a week of everyone kind of being alone and not interacting with others in physical proximity, and trying to figure out how to keep ourselves sane for those of us who want to interact with others, and people like Ebony, who's just like having the fucking time of her life.
Now, I like having the choice, you know?
I know.
So, you know, like, I know this is a hard time for extroverts. I see them complaining on Twitter, but I would say for introverts too, like for one thing, I love my boyfriend. I love him so very much. But, you know, when you're in lockdown with someone, you're like, okay, wow, we got to find ways to still have alone time, you know, and like space and, you know, talk to other people and whatever. And I think that's real. Like, you should be able to say that without, you know, it being like, oh, I secretly hate my partner. Like, nah, you know, like it would be hard doing this with anyone, you know?
Nobody should spend this much time with one other person nonstop.
I'm saying,
no.
It's not good. Especially if you're also then both worried, like, are we going to have jobs in 3 weeks? You know, like, are we going to get kicked out of our house because our state isn't yet doing, you know, rent freezes, whatever. It's a scary, scary time.
Yeah, it's real intense.
It's so easy to feel helpless right now. And so many things are happening that completely disrupt our mental health. Like, we don't have our routines anymore. We don't have that control of just being able to go outside if we want. We're all stuck together. This week I've been both a parent and a partner and like a PE teacher. And like we don't have our childcare anymore, and I have a 2.5-year-old and I love her. But I'm not a good teacher. Like, I shouldn't be doing things that, like, teachers do all day long. The one thing I'll say that's nice right now is it's really nice to collectively, all of us, not have our shit together. Like, that I'm appreciating.
Yeah.
Like all these Zoom calls I've been on all week long, like, everyone looks like shit. So many things are, like, interrupting everyone, like, no one has their shit together, and, and that's kind of nice. I like that.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's interesting. So I work from home. When I'm not traveling, this is my normal life. It's not that much different, but I'm really struggling because it's the collective that we are a part of right now where everyone else is struggling. People are very stressed. We're worried about loved ones. The choice to leave my house is removed, which makes me obviously want to leave my house and interact with people. And the reality is, like, as Ebony was saying, like, I know people who are already laid off and don't have jobs currently. And, you know, like, I've lost a lot of work, and who knows what's happening health-wise. I have several friends who have been infected already. And so, you know, it's there's something interesting about, not interesting, but I think it's a really important time for us to have a lot of compassion for ourselves, mm-hmm. And really be able to, like, just be okay being scared and sad and anxious and tired and eating too much, not eating enough. Like, all of these things are okay right now. And it's really, it can be hard living in capitalism where now, where you see online being like, well, now's the time that you work out, and now's the time that you clean and organize all your shit, or you write the screenplay, or you whatever. It's like, you don't have to do any of that, y'all. Just like,
yeah,
just chill. It's okay. Like, it's, it is what it is at this moment, and we're all in it together. A friend of mine sent me a video, actually. She lives in Tangier in Morocco. And at midnight, all, like, the whole community was out on their balconies chanting and praying together. Mm. Like, wow. The videos that I've seen out of, I think it was Italy, where someone just went out onto their porch and started playing their keyboard. And then someone else brought out, like, a saxophone on another balcony. And, like, people just, like, came and listened and sang along. And, like, there are these, like, little moments where you're like, yes, this is what humans do when we're free of, I don't know, capitalism. We're free of some restraints. Like, we're in it together.
I was talking to a patient yesterday, and this person said something that I just, like, really had to think about. They said, I think we're beginning to see some of the redemption of the internet. Like, this thing that has created so much division and online hate, and I know I'm preaching to the choir here about how so many of us have felt unsafe because of the ways in which the internet has done things and allowed things to happen. And this past week, it's allowed for a lot of connection, and I've actually reconnected with a lot of people in a way that I just wouldn't be able to if this situation was playing out just 10 years ago.
Yeah.
The internet, the infrastructure wouldn't be set up to allow us to do this.
Could you imagine if we didn't have the internet right now?
Oh my gosh.
Like, really? That I think about that. I'm like, if I don't think we're at a point in which our infrastructure is going to fail, but I was like, I live alone, y'all. Like,
yeah.
I know, like, I think that it's equally as bad to be living alone right now as it is to be stuck with one person for so long, right? And the internet is a place where we can connect. Like, I did some live streaming of a game just to, like, share this moment with me, right? Like, texting friends, checking in, having calls. Like, could you... I'm bringing back the calling people out of the blue thing.
Yeah, that, yeah.
You know, you're like, I know you're home. So,
I've been. I have this rule right now: is if someone calls me, I take the call. Which, like, wow. I never do. I hate phone calls.
Yeah,
and I don't. But, like, right now, it's like, oh man, this is our time to connect, and I don't have any excuses. Like, I feel that pressure to be productive and to do something. And then it's like, oh no, my daughter comes and reminds me that, like, this is not the reality anymore. Like, we have to spend our time together and connect. I was talking to a friend of mine, and he was saying, why am I so tired? Like, I didn't do anything all day. I've been stuck at home. I've been working from home, but I haven't physically done anything. And I said, this is what depression is like, when you feel like you can't do much, when you can't go outside and get sunlight, when all the normal routine is kind of ripped out of your life. This is what depression is like, and this is why it's so exhausting. Like, if you do go outside, you're constantly on guard, you're hypervigilant, and that's what, like, trauma is like. Like, right now, it is normal to feel the things that many people feel when they're depressed or when they're anxious or when they've gone through trauma. So we need to be kind to ourselves. We need to be compassionate. We need to connect with each other and just think about, how do I get through today and how do I get through tomorrow? Like, we don't need to worry about next month or 2 months from now, because the world could completely change. We just got to stay connected and get through the next day.
Yo, Dr. Arley just dropping wisdom.
You know how we can stay connected?
How?
by watching Picard.
Oh, yeah.
Can I just say real quick before we launch into Star Trek?
Of course.
Ali, I forgot that your daughter was so young. I thought she was a little bit older. So when you said that you were having to be a PE teacher, but that was the only subject you mentioned, I was like, I love that. That was the subject that you took on. And you were like,
that's all I got.
I'm not going to be working on math, like science, English, but I got PE. You know? Okay.
If like middle school me heard that, he would be like, what the hell are you talking about, Ebony? That would be the last class I would ever be qualified to teach.
But to a 2.5-year-old, yo, you're like Michael Jordan, you know? You're like an athletic god.
Oh, no. No. I was a Trekkie. What I spent most of my time doing in middle school was being Lieutenant Commander Corin Dyson of the USS Starwind, this role-playing game that I was
oh
like,
my God.
Super in. Yeah.
I love it.
I am so in love with this. Yes.
That's what I did, Ebony.
Is there any evidence of this?
Old emails. Very old emails. That's it.
Amazing.
Yeah. The thing is, Anita, I avoided having my picture taken because I did not feel good about myself at all. So for like all of middle school, I only have this one photo, and I call it the saddest photo of me ever. It's me sitting on a bench at school and like no one else is around me.
Oh my God. Are you sad, Keanu? Were you sad, Keanu, in that pic?
Oh my gosh, that makes me feel so much better about that picture, because I pretty much was.
Who took it?
That's the thing. I don't know.
Oh.
I have no idea. But I'll send it to you all after we record. It's like, yeah, but that's the only photo I have of me of like all of middle school.
Wow. I am going to Photoshop Keanu Reeves' head onto your head, though.
Just I got to say, Ebony's Photoshops are
legendary is what she's going to say. Legendary. Yes, no,
legendary is absolutely what I was going to say. Mm-hmm.
Maybe like Tal Shiar grade level?
Oh, so good.
I don't know. I'd say even like the Jot Vash level.
Oh, whoa. Like undetectable.
Like makes you kill yourself, you know?
Oh,
like,
whoa. That's some high-level Photoshop.
That was a little much. Sorry, everyone. I mean, relevant to the topic of this these episodes, but...
I do want to say... I have been looking forward to our conversation. Like, that's been something that has helped me get through the days, is like, I'm so excited to be able to sit down with you all and talk about this show that I'm not sure if I love or hate. Typically do both in the same episode. So I've been so looking forward to this. So thanks for having me back on. And I'm just so excited.
we've been so excited to have you back on. And I think that our sweet spot is... I don't know if I love or hate this. Like, I think that covers this entire podcast.
Oh, no,
listen,
I'm having the same reaction that I had with Discovery season one, wherein, like, I knew I did not like the show or, you know, was not fully on board at the very beginning, but I was holding out hope. But then I got suckered in. Like, I was hypnotized. And by this point in, you know, season one of Discovery and this point in season one of Picard, I take all my money. Like, please give me 6 seasons and a movie. I'm so in love with everything. Can't wait to talk about it.
Before we get into these two episodes, I would love to just hear very briefly, Ali, what your thinking is so far, since we're nearing the end of the season.
Yeah, which is, it feels like it's gone by both fast and slow. My feelings about Star Trek Picard, when this show was first announced at Star Trek, the Las Vegas convention. I mean, I wasn't there, but I was following it remotely. And I remember I was eating lunch, looking at the news on my phone. My daughter was very young at the time. I think she might have been just a few months old. When it was announced, I started crying.
Wow.
Because I so love Jean-Luc Picard. This character has always represented high morals, high ethics, high virtues. Always value-based decision-making. He represents this aspirational goal for me of the kind of person I want to be, the kind of leader I want to be, the kind of human. And to see him come back, or to know that he was coming back after all the intensity of that year of 2016 and 17, it meant a lot to me. So I've been really looking forward to this show. And then leading up to the first episode, Patrick Stewart was talking about how the show is really going to be about Brexit, and it was going to be about nationalism and our interconnected global community. So like that is what I was bringing into the show is this idea of returning to high morals and ethics and questions about the world as it exists right now. And to hear.
So you're intensely disappointed?
I'm disappointed in that. Like, I don't think this show has really lived up to the social commentary. Like, to me, Star Trek is always about asking these questions that make me think. And I think the social comment, there is social commentary here. I think it's kind of, it's not complicated. It doesn't really make me think. That has been a disappointment. I'm also very disappointed in all the new characters. Like, I don't care about any of them. None whatsoever. At the same time, seeing Jean-Luc Picard again, seeing Seven of Nine, especially seeing Hugh and the XBs and that storyline, like I've absolutely loved seeing them again and seeing where they're at. And of course, seeing Riker and Troi, I think that episode might have been the best episode of the whole series to me. So that's kind of where I'm at. I don't care about anything that's new. I love seeing these old characters. I'm disappointed in a larger storyline. But, you know, the thing about Star Trek, it's kind of like sex. Even when it's bad, it's still pretty good.
Huh. You have a very specific sexual experiences there, buddy.
Yeah, I would say that is not always the case at all.
It's like, so. I feel like, yeah, but that's all right. That's all right. That gives me no segue into actually getting into this. Mm-hmm. No, that's actually really helpful. Not the last bit, but the rest of it is really helpful in terms of how you are approaching like this conversation that we're about to have. Because as we've gotten, you know, we've had a guest for each episode, and so we're just bringing them in to talk about, you know, pieces here and there. But I think this, especially as we're getting towards the end, we're all having some feelings about this show and the ups and downs of it. So we are going to talk specifically about episodes 8 and 9, which means there's only one episode left after this. Ebony, do you want to give us a quick rundown of those two, the two episodes we're going to talk about today?
Yeah. And remember, folks, I'm grabbing these directly from CBS.com. So if you have a problem with this rundown, take it up with your mother or the social media coordinator at CBS. I do not care. Okay. So episode 8, Broken Pieces.
When I love that Ebony's isolation has not made her any less spicy.
Not friendlier whatsoever. Okay. So when devastating truths behind the Mars attack are revealed, Picard realizes just how far many will go to preserve secrets stretching back generations. All while the La Serena crew grapples with secrets and revelations of their own. Nerissa directs her guards to capture Elnor, setting off an unexpected chain of events on the Borg cube. That's also where my homegirl, Seven, reappears. And then episode 9, Et in Arcadio Ego, part 1. Following an unconventional and dangerous transit, Picard and the crew finally arrive at Soji's homeworld, Capellius, which looks like a giant yoga retreat. However, that's not on the CBS website. However, with Romulan warbirds on their tail, their arrival brings only greater danger as the crew discovers more than they expected about the planet's inhabitants.
Oh boy. All right. A lot happened in these episodes. Let's just start from the top. We don't have to go in order, but we just need to talk about that opening scene with the Zat Vash and like the see the truth thing. And then they all do like mass suicide, which was horrifying.
Yeah. And content warning would have been nice.
Yeah. I mean, like, what in the holy hell? It did give us the information that we had questioned about the last two episodes of like, why did Jurati like, what is this that she saw? Is Commodore O from the future? Like, what is it that was so compelling about this? I still don't think it necessarily answers that, but it does, like, it ties it up with a bow, right? That, like, this thing that happened thousands and thousands of centuries ago where synthetics came and, like, destroyed organics or whatever the fuck the storyline was, like, it happened in the past. It's not something that we're not seeing a future vision here. We're just, they are now, the Zatvash was formed because they're afraid of this happening again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, like Ali, like, I largely couldn't care less about the larger story here, you know? And I mean, the like, sort of pitched battle between synthetic life and organic life is a narrative that keeps reappearing in speculative fiction and will, you know, for many eons to come, I assume. But yeah, I couldn't care less about it. What I did care about, unsurprisingly, is the image of the Zatvash in that desert looking like a Sting music video. And I swear to God, whoever is doing this show, like, really loved the Dune series, because I think the Zatvash just be like the Fishwives plus the Bene Gesserit. But do I love it? Yes. If you're talking about a multi-generational cabal of women who are there to kick some ass while looking good in a cape, I'm here for it. So Star Trek knew how to deliver for me.
So one of my complaints about The Next Generation and all the Star Trek that's come after it is it's really been very stupid about AI and sentient artificial intelligence.
What? You're kidding. Yeah,
I know, it's hard to believe. Like, you've got Data, you've got the EMH and Voyager, you've got Moriarty that was just sort of like created and then like never really, like, there was a follow-up episode, great, but like no one else has ever done this, like, just kind of accidentally created artificial intelligence. So that's always been a complaint of mine. Like, Star Trek seems pretty stupid when it comes to AI. Like, the singularity hasn't happened. So I guess Picard, this episode kind of reveals that, like, well, maybe the reason for that is because the Zatvash have been, like, taking out AI whenever it crops up because of this stupid thing. but the, like, the reveal, it doesn't work for me at all, because I don't care about Commander O. I don't care about Nerissa. It just seems like a, like Battlestar Galactica did this better. And like, not that long ago. So I'm not invested in those characters, and I'm not invested in that reveal.
I'm not either. I hate both of those characters.
Okay, I'm gonna need y'all both to leave the podcast. But wait, hold on. Tamlin Tamita is a goddess.
We did learn that Commodore O is half Romulan, which is why she is in, because we were like, she's a Vulcan. We don't know what's going on. Why does she give a shit? So, like, we're getting a few answers for some of the questions that we had had. The Borg cube, we didn't know why the Borg cube all of a sudden was, like, disconnected from the rest of the system. And it was because the auntie broke a Borg cube by sheer force of her despair, which, can you imagine what that, like, what that actually means? Like, when she connected to the cube, like, her, I guess, insanity caused them to break the cube off? Like, was that the implication there?
Maybe.
I guess.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's no answers from the two of us. But I think what you're talking about, Anita, is really interesting. And this goes back to, you know, after the vision of that, like, mid-2000s Apple commercial that, you know, made the ladies go crazy. and provoked, like, this self-annihilation. And then the self-annihilation that then becomes a theme throughout the rest of the episode, right? With, like, Captain Vandermeer and, you know, like, Jurati, you know, and just the various ways in which either individuals or, you know, cultures or groups kind of wrestle with, like, the notion of, like, the thing that cannot be lived with. You know, like, I did... think that this was one of the times in which this show was trying for more and almost getting there. Yeah, I would have liked a content warning, because frankly, seeing, you know, those women, like, bash their brains in, or Rios, you know, mime Vandermeer shooting his brains out, like, it was a lot. But I do think there's something there about reaching a point from which one can no longer like, forgive oneself, or, you know, forgive, like, the larger group, you know, like, the kind of irreparable breach that happens. I wish the vision of it that we saw had been, you know, done a little bit better. Because I swear to God, I was just like, this looks like, I don't know, like an iPhone commercial from 2006. This does not look that horrifying.
I'm kind of getting used to the, in a horrible way, getting used to these opening teasers that are kind of horrific. After they killed off, what's his name from Voyager, when they ripped his eye out.
Yeah.
What was his name? Love that character. Anyways, he's gone. And that was really horrifying. Like, I never expected to see something like that in Star Trek.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's, Picard has been kind of pushing the envelope with that in a surprising
and
way.
And they're swearing. Oh,
yeah.
My goodness.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh. I don't know if JL would ever approve of that much swearing. So, Ebony, I'm kind of with you here. The idea that these synths are considered to be lesser life that must be eliminated because they might introduce impurities or in some way corrupt the larger culture. Like, I'm with that idea. And I think where Picard is trying to go with this is this this analogy of the synths being like refugees or being like any other outside group that we think might corrupt the larger group. Like, I see that. It just gets very, it gets muddy for me. Like, I and the other thing that's frustrating to me about this is I see where the show is going, but Picard doesn't struggle with it. There's no, as an audience, we're not struggling along with the characters. Picard is just like, this is bad. We shouldn't have done this. I don't know.
And yet, this is the thing that ultimately left me profoundly upset at the end of these two episodes. We have been led to believe that the viewpoint shared by Picard and, you know, sort of the right-thinking elements that we've met in this show is that the Romulans as a group of people were hard done by, but also the synthetics were, and that the xenophobia that has run rife through the Federation is somehow a black mark against who we are, right? That we have failed to see the inherent worth and value of these other forms of life. But what episode 9 tells us is, and this is a trope that I absolutely hate, and I call it sometimes the townspeople are right. And it's like, it turns out that the threat that the bad people have been telling you about actually is a threat. Right. So we've been led to believe that, like, oh, the synthetics would never, you know, eliminate or, you know, try and annihilate organic life. Oh, turns out they do. So turns out the prophecy was right, you know?
I mean, totally, I agree with that. I also have a hard time with, like, so what you're both talking about, right? The synths are, we're talking about refugees, we're talking about like xenophobia, you know, very what Star Trek has always sort of done, except now it's a little bit weird. But my issue was that, like, episode 9, I was like, okay, episode 8, let's see what's happening here. Like, I'm down, whatever. Episode 9, I was like, oh, for fuck's sake.
Yeah.
Between the yoga retreat bullshit, where they're all like, apparently you're like chill, cool people when you wear monochrome like colors, because that's, I feel like that's such a Star Trek thing to do in terms of like, we're all chill when we wear like different shades of orange together.
I'm into it.
I mean, I'm into it. It's just, it that felt, and then the really bad gold makeup on them. Like, there's just a bunch of shit that, like, it pulled me out of what they were trying to do and into this kind of, like, this is not what I want to say. I'm getting distracted by the aesthetic problems. What I'm having an issue with is that, like, yeah, I think it is okay for an oppressed people to rise up.
Yeah.
Right. Like, that is an acceptable thing. And they might rise up with various different modes of survival. Right. Which can include violence because it is necessary, not because it is anything that anyone actually wants. The way that they're doing it here is like they were happy and peaceful and fine and didn't really give a shit that they had a ban on them. Apparently, like, they were happy to be hiding out in their like sanctuary. And then it's done in this way where not Janna, but beautiful
Sutra?
Flower, I guess. Yeah, whatever. Wait, what was her name?
Was that Sutra?
Sutra, yes, thank you. Sutra, which is the sister to Janna, or the sibling to Janna, becomes this like really violent, vindictive, manipulative person that we don't align with.
Yeah.
So the way that they're dealing with these people who are legitimately oppressed and are about to be fucking obliterated is for us to be like, you're doing it wrong because you're not doing it the old white man way. And that, I just, like, that kind of narrative framing really grates on me a lot.
Well, yeah, and I mean, Picard says, like, you know, when he makes his big argument about them, excuse me, the synthetics, you know, rising up and, you know, eliminating all organic life. He's like, no, you know, the Federation, Starfleet, they're going to listen to me. I will speak with your voice. And I'm like, yeah, that's the problem. You know, like right, you, right. They should be speaking. You need to pass the mic, Picard / old white people listening to this, you know, like nothing about us without us. Like you, this is not your role. So I was glad that whatever version of Dr. Soong we got there was like, I don't know why you think they listen to you, Picard. They didn't listen to you before. They're certainly not going to do it now. Also, I kind of love that they're trying to give us a version of Data and Lore with Janna and Sutra, or, you know, Soji and Sutra. Unfortunately, that actor cannot quite pull it off. But do we all think that the Dr. Soong that we're seeing is actually going to turn out to be like Lore, but in like an old android's body?
Oh, I would love that.
Right? Because that feels like something he would pull.
Totally. And that that would really satisfy my problem with this is like Brent Spiner's playing another Soong. Like he...
that all look exactly the same. Like those are strong ass jeans.
Are they just cloning themselves? Or like, if not, man, they need way more genetic diversity in that family lineage. I'm going to take it back for a moment. Anita, I feel compelled to defend the yoga retreat and outfits.
Is it
here?
Because it reminded you of that Next Generation episode where Wesley like breaks something? What is it called? Like Rubicon 3 or whatever? It looked exactly the same.
That's exactly where I was going, Ebony. It's like, it reminds me of every stupid away planet or away mission in TNG. It was like a high budget version of those stupid planets we saw where there's only like one outpost and everyone is like it acting like it's some kind of yoga retreat. And the like bad makeup also reminded me of 1980s TNG. So I kind of love that. I didn't really like where it went with the story, but I did like that. The Picard moment where he's like, oh, Starfleet will believe me, blah, blah, blah. And the Soong's like, no, you're stupid. I like that because that also was a throwback to earlier in the season where he very naively goes to the Admiral and the Admiral says, you're, you know, like how dare you?
Right.
You're hubris. Yeah. So I liked that.
One of the things that we have discussed throughout this whole episode or the whole show so far is like the ways that it is Star Trek and the ways that it's not and the ways that Picard has felt really off in this sense. Lara and I talked about it on our last episode of like this sense of, you know, he doesn't really have the same kind of compassion or he's not able to express it. Like the whole interaction with him and Soji on the, in episode 7, where he's with Troy and Riker, like that one, I agree. That's the best episode so far, but also like, Picard was so fucking tone deaf in the way that he was talking to Soji. And it was really bizarre. Even after his friends were like, hey, buddy, let's dial it back. Remember how you give these big, powerful speeches? So what I'm noticing is that like the show brings these moments in. So, you know, where he talks about in Broken Pieces about the future is left for us to write. We have these powerful tools of hopefulness and openness and curiosity. And that's the shit that I love about JL, you know, like that's the stuff in Star Trek that you're like, yes, you're the one here bringing the hope and bringing the compassion in like these extremely difficult times. But it's starting to feel like these are tiny little one-off moments, right?
Yeah.
As opposed to the spirit of the character and the spirit of the show. And I also like the idea of Picard grappling with, like, you know, being Borg and coming back and trying to be human again. So there's a line where he says, Data's capacity for processing and expressing emotion was limited. I suppose we had that in common, right? Like, there's a lot of interesting self-reflection here, but it doesn't feel integrated. It feels very, like, one-off moments here and there.
Yeah. My friend of mine, we were texting back and forth about these last two episodes, and his name's Zahir. And so he said this version, this new Star Trek, feels like the Next Generation episode Future Imperfect. This is where this alien is kind of lonely and stuck with Riker and simulates this future and pretends to be like Riker's child. And the future seems real to Riker, and yet there's a lot of pieces that just don't add up. And he said, this is exactly how I feel about Picard. And I thought that was a really great analogy, where there's these bits and pieces that I just love. Like, I do love when the show is exploring an aging Jean-Luc Picard.
Yeah.
But it's done that very inconsistently. I think they mentioned his illness in the very beginning and, like, in episode 9 now. Mm-hmm. And so we, as an audience watching that, you can kind of forget it because you don't really see it impacting him. And then you're kind of left to wonder, well, is he so tone deaf with what was that planet called? Pernith something? The Riker Troy planet.
Oh, Nepenthe.
Nepenthe, there we go. It's like, is he tone deaf because of that? Because he is losing control of his emotions, or is it just bad writing? Like, I can't tell. So it's, we get these bits and pieces, but it doesn't all come together. Like, one of my favorite parts about episode 8, I've, like, really loved everything with the Borg. The idea of these Borg as victims of assimilation and trying to recover from the trauma of having your complete identity ripped away from you, the stigma of looking like XBs, that whole rehabilitation process and how Hugh has taken them on, I absolutely love that. I love everything that suggests in terms of our ability to grow from difficult experiences.
I kind of wish that was the show, to be honest.
Yeah.
Like, I agree. Like, watching Seven be like, I could activate this Borg army, but, like, that would be horrifying. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, to the conflict of that, of, like, I have this power that I can use, but, like, I'm afraid that I won't be able to let it go, or that, like, it would be comforting to be back in this space. And, like, all of that, it just, you know, Hugh gets murdered and then that's it. Like, what, there's not going to be that much more with the Borg storyline in the last episode.
No, but I do think what they're setting, I do think they're setting up something interesting for season 2. I think, to me anyway, it seems clear that there is going to be more exploration of, like, the difference between the two types of synthetic life that they represent, the Borg and, you know, the other sense. I think, you know, we don't have the time or space to discuss it in this episode, but I think there's something really interesting about the Borg as a metaphor for being disabled, for instance, you know, and, like, the cyborg body versus the sense on Planet Yoga, who are, like, aggressively abled, right? You know?
Yeah.
And, like, you know, yeah, we see a couple who are played by people of color, but for the most part, like, most things in our mainstream media, it's pretty daggone white. It's almost all, like, cisgender folks, you know? Everybody is very skinny, you know? It's like sexy robots, you know, versus the version of the Borg that we get, you know? So I think, like, I do feel like there's a chance for them, and they are allowing the space for that to still happen. But going back to the idea of, like, the show being kind of, I don't know, structurally, I don't want to say inconsistent, but there being kind of ruptures there between the times when we see, like, Picard really wrestling with something and having the space to really wrestle with something and be wrong about stuff versus all of the other stuff, which just frankly is not as good. Although, yo, we got so many Rios clones and these
Dude.
Episodes, and I was so down
Ebony.
For that.
Okay.
Like,
look,
I was
look,
into
look.
Every single
mm-hmm,
one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I know, Ollie, that you were like, I don't like all the other characters, blah, blah, blah. I totally agree, except I like Rafi, yeah. and I fucking love Rios. He is so hot. He
I love Rios.
He's hotter than
Holy just, shit. I think he's one of the better actors on the show. Like,
so,
I,
for sure.
You know, like, I believe he can carry a scene in the way that, like, Patrick Stewart can carry a scene. But I think part of the problem is, like, you know, to pull back, you know, Patrick Stewart is an old man. They know he doesn't have long, they don't know how much longer he has, right? And so you build into the show, even though it's called Picard, all of this other stuff so that when he leaves, when he's no longer able to do the show, you know, you still have something to continue with. The problem is none of us came to the show for that. No one right. really cares. Right. I love Rios. I love Rafi. You know, there are things about the show that I really enjoy, but if the scene does not have Jean-Luc Picard in it, I'm 75% less interested in what's going on.
And that's kind of the impossibility of the show is it's hard for any of the other actors to really stand up to Patrick Stewart because he is someone who's lived in our minds and in pop culture for decades. We just haven't had as much time with these other characters. I do like Rafi. I think she needs more screen time and more to do. I love that we have a character that's struggling with substance use in Star Trek. Yes, you know, finally, we need to see that kind of representation. I'm surprised we didn't have more people struggling with substance use on Deep Space Nine because that's one messed up place. And Rios is pretty good. But then let's talk about Jurati. So all of this stuff has been revealed about what she did, what Agnes did, and how she was impacted. And Episode 8 and 9 feels, and I might be mixing up a little episode 7 too, but it feels like a little whiplash to me where in episode 9 they've kind of forgiven her.
Yeah.
And just like letting her come along for the ride. Mm-hmm. While just like an hour ago in terms of the show, everyone was furious with her for killing.
But she said she was sorry.
Yeah, I know.
She said she's not murdering anymore.
I know, like she's straight up I'm done murdering you guys.
To be fair, it was pretty funny. I did appreciate that line, but yeah.
Yeah, I would not trust someone who has had this mind control Vulcan, Romulan, mind meld, brain control.
But is it brain control? Like, okay. I feel like every time mind meld comes up, it's always a fucking thing because we're like, wait, so anyone can do it now? Like you can just learn it? Is that a thing now? That's not a whatever. So like a mind meld historically was sharing information and sharing brains and like beliefs and thoughts and feelings and all of that shit.
A melding of the minds, if you will.
Mind to your mind.
Exactly. So like, why is it now like she was being manipulated? Like, why are we talking about it as if, like, they forced her to do something?
Well, according to Star Trek 2009, when Spock Prime melds with Chris Pine's Kelvin timeline, Kirk...
Do we have to acknowledge the existence of that?
There is... You can have an emotional transference as well. So it's not just thoughts that can transfer, but emotions can transfer as well. So I think we can extrapolate on that and say like you can transfer a bunch of stuff. You can like kind of dump things into someone's mind, and if they're not ready for it, they might not be able to handle it too well.
Yeah, I mean, like if she saw the equivalent of like a snuff video, it's gonna mess her up.
Yeah.
So the thinking is that Commodore O feels so strongly about this and has somehow moved up the ranks and all of that. There's a lot of hand-waving stuff that is happening right now to justify this stuff. That, like, she feels so strongly about it, therefore Jurati's going to feel strongly about it and just, like, move forward. Like, I don't know. There's just a lot of, things like this that I'm... Ugh.
I want to stake a claim right now, or rather posit that I think in the next episode we are going to learn that, again... I think it's lore. I don't think we're looking at a human here. I think it's lore in an old robot suit. I think he has done like a brain transfer of his own into Dr. Jurati's body. I think something's going on there. And that's why she's like, please let me stay, blah, blah, blah. Cause you know, like y'all, don't count out lore is what I am saying.
Yeah. Yeah. Please. Please. Because we also know, Ebony, that Lore was last seen doing stuff with the Hugh Borg.
Yes. Yes.
You know, that was where we last saw him. Can we talk about the other mind meld that we saw in episode 9?
The one with Sutra?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. What the fuck?
So, like, what?
Exactly.
Okay. So that I think that that's an interesting. Okay. We should discuss how, what the fuck, why can she just mind melt? Because she's learned all the Vulcan songs in her life at some point. But that I think there is something interesting of, like, this piece of information is not meant for some people. Mm-hmm. Right, that it is not comprehensible in the same way. And I think that part of it is interesting. Although I hate the character of Sutra, and I hate that they're like, well, she's going to murder her best friend so that she can now lead these people who are supposed to be incredibly smart and rational and logical and blah, 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 blah.
Do you think that the reason why she looks the way that she does is so that we can have that scene with her flirting with Narek because he only responds to, like, sexy evil brunettes?
Oh, man.
Like, that's his bag?
Oh, he was so close to being killed.
I know. Oh. Listen, I think I enjoyed these episodes a lot more than either of you. And part of the reason why is because there was so little Narek in them, you know?
So, like, little.
Ugh.
I mean,
when
Ebony,
he came back, I was so annoyed.
I don't want to say I'm not enjoying the episodes. I love this show. Like, I think I do. Especially, I got to say, especially these last 2 weeks, mm-hmm. having the show to look forward to and just being back with these characters, like, it does actually provide me with some good mental health coping. I've actually really enjoyed it. And look, I'm putting my money on this right now. This is a Femme Frequency exclusive. I know we're gonna, the next episode is gonna end with the Starfleet squadron or armada or whatever showing up, and you know, just like season one Discovery, it's gonna end with us seeing the Enterprise. That's what's gonna happen.
Yeah,
like oh, ooh, they're doing the same trick again. So, like, I got a feeling I know where this is going. The idea of seeing Lore revisited, the idea, I didn't even think about it until you mentioned it, Ebony, but the idea of Borg artificial life versus mm-hmm. These other yoga artificial life, like that is exciting to me.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's an interesting direction the show can go, but why is it taking us so long to get here? You know, like,
That is the question.
Like, I've enjoyed some of the stops. Like, another thing this show has done that I've really loved is it's getting around some of that monocultural problems that Star Trek has. Yeah. Like, all Klingons are like this. All Romulans are like this. Now we know that, like, there's diversity in the Romulan culture. Like, you can be a really annoying, sexy, but not sexy character. Or you can be, like, these nuns and Elnor, whatever the hell he is.
Elnor.
So I like seeing that diversity. I like some of the stops that we've had, but honestly, it's taken us a long time to get to a story that has potential but hasn't quite paid off.
Yeah.
Not to say something really stupid after something so thoughtful, but that watching the Borg be mass airlocked was horrifying.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Which obviously was made so that Seven didn't have a choice but to, like, you know, take control of them. But, like, that shit, the fuck. I found it very disturbing, especially as we have all been, like, really wanting more, like, redemption arcs and, like, the XBs and what's going to happen with them and all of that.
That I've found myself caring most about the Borg and Hugh. And I'll include Seven in that. It's been such a wonderful surprise when we first saw Hugh meet Picard again. I thought he was gonna, like, attack him or something.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not what happened. He had so much gratitude, affection, love, and support towards Picard. And I've just really feel myself caring about these XBs more than any of the other new characters. And that was, it was so hard to see that, to see them just wiped out like that.
Yeah, it really was. I completely forgot what I was about to say. I just started reading Ebony's notes in our script.
Oh, do you want me to talk about how
I hate every romance on this show?
Yeah, I think the reason why I hate every romance or every like nod towards romance on this show is that none of these characters have any sort of like romantic chemistry with any other character that's remotely believable. Mm. At least not the pairings we're seeing. So like Rios having sex with Jurati.
I can't believe you cheated on me.
The like VC Andrews twins, not into it, whatever. But then like the whole thing with Rafi and Picard and like, I love you, you don't have to say it back. And at first I was like, oh, it's a friend kind of, I love you. But then maybe it wasn't. And I was like, what?
Wait, no. I thought that was a really sweet moment. And that was not romantic. Come on.
It better not be, because I'm not into it. You know, I'm just like, you know me. My thing is, I want to see more friendships, like more intimate friendships on screen.
I think that's what the Rafi and Picard thing was moment. I really liked that moment. Like
I liked it too until where I thought, if they wind up kissing, I'm going to lose my shit.
Oh my God, you're gross.
That I thought never crossed my mind.
Okay. It didn't cross my mind either.
Yeah, this is like more of a father kind of.
And it was sweet in that like they're both totally dysfunctional, broken humans that cannot express emotion and like, she's trying, and that is part of her recovery from being abusing substances and all the trauma and all the shit in her life. Like her just being like, "You mean something to me." Mm-hmm. I felt that.
Can I ask you all a question about this? The friendship, because I've been thinking about that too. Is this is so weird for me to be playing around with this idea in my head, but I am so much more bought into the friendships and relationships on Discovery than I am Star Trek Picard. Minus Michael Burnham and Ash Tyler, I really like most of the relationships on that show. And I'm saying like a more broad definition of relationships, so romantic, but also friendships. Like I really care about those characters a lot more than I do most of these relationships.
I wonder if it has, so yes, I wonder also, like, we're coming back to the show about a character we know, expecting to see characters that we've had decades-long relationships with. And that is just such a different way of entering programming, right? Like, with Discovery, we're starting from scratch completely. Whereas, so I think that there's, like, I don't know. I don't think you're wrong, and I don't think that I think that they could have easily done that on Picard or done it better, but I do think that the fact that like they're trying to bring in new characters and old characters and pair them together and also age the old characters in ways that feel sincere. Like I feel like that's a tall order. And it affects the way that we engage with it.
Yeah, no, you're right. I'm trying to think of other shows that have done that well. I mean, it's hard. Like Star Trek: The Next Generation brought in members of the original series from time to time, but it was in a time limited way. Mm-hmm. The show was never in the shadow of those other characters in the way that Star Trek Picard is.
I was also thinking about how like the show is called Star Trek Picard. We've talked a lot about how like they're setting it up so that if
Patrick Stewart. Luke,
yes, thank you. If Patrick Stewart can't get sick or, you know, heaven forbid, other things happen, can't do it. Like the show doesn't go on without him. So are they setting it up so that the characters outside of that can have their own show or like movies or something like that? Because like, I don't know. It just occurred to me while we're talking that like the show is called Picard. It can't exist without him. It's why you don't name shows after characters.
I think what would happen is they would rename the ship, the Picard. And yeah, they would try and keep going, you know, for a season and see if people
totally
stuck with
would.
It.
Oh my gosh, and they totally would do that.
I think that there is no way that CBS Paramount has not envisioned a way for this show to last for years and Discovery, and that ultimately there aren't things that tie them together in like a Marvel universe, cinematic universe kind of way, you know? I just think, there are absolutely people who are paid to be that mercenary about these kinds of high-dollar properties.
I would have guessed that Star Wars knew what they were doing, and they sure shit didn't, so...
Yeah, but they still minted a fucking ton of money, right? Like, as much as, you know, people might have had problems with it, whatever, they still are making so much money. And do I sign up for each new version that comes out? Yeah. Like, I can't wait for, you know, season two of The Mandalorian. I'll never give it up, you know?
Yeah, so. You know, I'm so excited to see Picard and Guinan reunited in season two.
Oh, yes!
Like, that's what I want. Like, I will pay for the whole season just to see that episode.
I gotta say, fuck Whoopi Goldberg for being a horrible person, because I love Guinan. Who doesn't love Guinan?
Yeah.
But she's been canceled 5,000 times and appropriately so, because she is horrible. And so I just, you said that and I just had so many feelings that were conflicting and difficult.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Ebony,
yes.
Many conflicting feelings.
So many conflicting feelings. Also, in case you don't know what I'm talking about, one, she defended Mel Gibson. She also made horrible comments about rape not really being rape. Like, she's just not cool. As well as many other things, I'm sure, unfortunately. Anyways, I still love Guinan. Retroactively. it's already in the world before all of this, before I knew all of this. So on that note, Ebony.
Yeah.
Do you got a hair report for us?
Yeah, of course I do. So obviously Rafi looks great as always. Those curls, impeccable, look well moisturized. Good work. Problems. Elnor. His lace front is obviously a little bit too heavy, so it's dragging on his hairline, and they need to put a little bit more makeup up there because it's not blending in. You need to work a little harder on Elnor's hairline lace front.
You gotta work a little harder
emergency.
On Elnor. You gotta work harder on Elnor in general.
It's
that fucking character.
Yeah, bless his heart. So yeah, that's my hair report for the week. Please go to your... Run, don't walk to your nearest YouTube lace front tutorial and do something about Elnor's hairline. Thank you very much.
All right, let's wrap up by giving our ratings. So we can rate them individually or as a set, but what should our rating system be this week?
Yoga pants?
Yes.
Excellent. All right, Ebony, let's start with you.
I really enjoyed both of these episodes. There were, for me, comparatively few moments during which I found my attention wandering, unlike some of the other episodes. Like, I was pretty engaged for the most part with both episode 8 and episode 9. 8 was hard to watch for, you know, reasons we've talked about, you know? But I stuck with it, and I'm glad that I did. So I am going to give this set 8 out of 10 yoga pants.
Wow.
Damn.
Yeah.
That's a lot of yoga pants.
Are you getting on a curve?
I am not.
Okay.
I'm being critical of the media I love, but I do love it. I got to acknowledge.
All right, Ollie.
Good sticker plug right there. If I have to grade on a curve, I'm giving it 5 yoga pants. and these are like yoga pants in need of... laundry. So if I'm grading it separately, I really enjoyed episode 8 much more than episode 9 because it had much more of that Borg storyline. So if I'm grading them separately, I'd give 7 or 8 yoga pants that are like really new and crisp and like ready to be like stretched. And then I'd give
Do
episode 9
Do you want
9,
new
like,
yoga pants? You want older, like middle of road yoga pants, right? Like they're a little bit softer.
See,
I don't know.
I don't have yoga pants, so I'm just like, making this up as we go. I wear shorts if I'm doing yoga. I don't even do yoga, so I don't even know why I said that. I bike. I ride my bike, so I should be giving like very different ratings here. All right, so that's what I think, Anita.
All right. All right, I'm going to rate them separately because I also agree. I liked 8 a lot more than 9, so I'm giving 8 5 yoga pants, and then I'm going to give 9 like 2 because I really fucking hate the way that episode ended. Wow. Like, just, although I did, we didn't talk about the giant flowers, the defense system. Oh. That was cool. Yeah. Okay, I'm going to give it 3. I'm going to give episode 9 3 yoga pants. But you know, they're a little tattered. They're like, you know, where the, like, they start to get thin and like a little ply, what's it called? The, like, where it gets all pliey, where the things pop
up. Like a light starts pilling out, you mean?
Pilling, that's it. Yeah. So that's it. All right, y'all. That is it for this week. Join us next time as we come back to discuss the season finale. As of this recording, we have no idea who the showrunner of episode 2 of Star Trek will be. And to be honest, none of us knows whether they'll even have electricity in 3 weeks. Oh, Ebony.
It's she real. Listen, you have to confront your fears to get over them.
That will not stop us from coming back to you with all our half-baked commentary on what we loved, hated, and were completely befuddled by in season 1 and what we're looking forward to in season 2. Ollie, thank you so much for joining us. Having you on. You are wonderful.
Love hanging out with y'all.
Yeah. How can folks find out more about you and what you do?
Yeah, easiest way to get in touch with me, go to youtube.com/thepsychshow. I make videos that celebrate mental health and psychology. I've been making a lot about trying to cope with this crisis that we're in. Or come hang out with me on Twitter. I am at Alimatu, AliMatTu.
Amazing. If you like this show or our main show, Feminist Frequency Radio, help us keep making it by heading over to patreon.com/femfreak to become a show backer and get access to exclusive perks. And you know, I'll just say, one, I hope everyone is taking care of themselves right now and doing what you need to do and having a lot of compassion for yourselves. I will say that creators and artists and freelancers are getting hit real hard right now. So if you are not worried about your job and you got some income, like, go back some people's Patreons, go buy some merch, you know, support folks and also in nonprofits, because this is a very strange, difficult time for a lot of people. And I hope you are all staying safe and connecting with the people you love. Big thanks go out to our producer, Rob Hera, and to Carrie Stimson for technical support. Our art is by the amazing Ray Abelard, and we will see you all next time. Stay safe, wash your hands, you know.
Shields
just
up.
Wash your hands. That's watch right. That video that Ava DuVernay posted where it's like someone washing their hands with gloves with like black cream or something where you see how much you don't wash your hands well. Mm-hmm. Go wash that. Watch that and then learn how to wash your hands. Star Trek out.
Oh, my God. Bye.
Bye.